Welcome back, listeners. I am lucky to have Ben Longwell on a Zoom call with us from all the way over in New Zealand. Ben is a returning guest to our show, and I wanted to talk with him about some kind of functionality and progress-oriented questions. Ben, I will leave it to you to let listeners know a little bit what you're doing back here in the Western US, as well as where you are now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Maddie, for having me back. I sure appreciate it. It's always a privilege to be able to share on these sorts of platforms, and I sure appreciate your work. I am originally from Colorado, married a Kiwi girl, and spent 11 years down here in New Zealand getting started with our business, True West Horsemanship. We've worked on ranches there and stations down here, as well as starting young horses for the last 15 or 20 years. And basically, my mission is to help horses and people achieve more together. And really, I think that keyword together is an important aspect of getting people on the same page and understanding their horses better, being able to communicate and progress in whatever they are wanting to do on better terms with their horse. We teach clinics, we start young horses, we develop ranch horses there in the States. We're based in Oregon now. And so we're down here in New Zealand for a couple of months, kind of avoiding the worst of the weather in the Northern Hemisphere and revisiting a lot of our faithful clients down here in the Southern Hemisphere. It's been a great summer clinic tour run down here, and we've got a couple more weeks before we head back.
Fantastic. So I got in touch with you, Ben, after I was talking with a few people and doing a lot of thinking on my own about this, a bit of a divide between people, and I'll say mostly women, who are more and more concerned with how horses are thinking and feeling. I think this is kind of a natural growth out of the way horsemanship has been going and what we know about everything from fight, flight, freeze to, you know, just the horse's brain. And so that kind of considering that as an evolution and how that is a good thing and also in my mind a bad thing. And also I was talking with a friend of mine named Nicole Qualtieri, who has observed the same phenomenon of, for lack of a better word, kind of quiet visiting time with horses and, you know, being respectful of the thinking and the feeling. And she called it an abdication of duty to the athleticism of the horse when you get too into prioritizing the thinking and feeling. And I wondered if we could start off there. It's kind of a super loaded question with which you could probably spend 30 minutes or more expounding on. But what do you think of this idea of, you know, the emphasis being on the mental well-being of a horse being an abdication of duty to the athleticism of the horse?
I think that that's such an interesting statement, and it sums up part of it very well. I think the overall picture of what we're seeing in the horsemanship world is it's almost still two extremes, and we have folks that are still, whether they're competitively focused or just focused on a job, or even those who just pleasure ride, you know, that they're stuck in the old ways, stuck in just doing stuff with horses and making the horse do stuff, all the way to the other end of the extreme, where we're starting to see more and more people focused on how that horse is thinking and feeling and making that the be all and end all of what they're doing or actually not doing with their horses. And I think, as with most things in life, it's actually a balance. For years now, I've been making it quite an emphasis in my clinics to make sure people are aware of what the horse is thinking and feeling. And I talk about the mental and emotional side of their reality and their perspectives, and how that basically is in a direct line of the results that we're looking for in the physical. So the physical results that we're looking for, the quality, all of that stuff is directly tied to how the horse is thinking and feeling, the mental and emotional aspects. I define response, which is what obviously we're all looking for, in the horse to be not just the right thing, but the right thing done from the right frame of mind for the right reason. So I'm all about trying to bridge that gap between these two extremes that we still see in the horse world, and trying to help people realize that the better we can get them thinking and feeling about the things that we would like to be doing, then the more they can come along with us, there can be cooperation and even enjoyment, I think, on the horse's part as well, as we move forward towards some common goals. However, you know, I just actually wrote this down the other day. It was sort of an idea I had around doing an article or a podcast myself. And I just wrote down purpose versus progress. Why do those without a job for their horses sometimes take too long to progress? And those with a job often rush the progress instead of taking the time.
That's a great point. And
it just is something I see all the time, because I work with working cowboys and on the ranches and stuff, and a lot of competitive riders that are just stuck in that idea of still approaching the horse more as a tool and something to achieve their aims. And this is how you do it, and this is how we've always done it, so we just make it happen. And then all the way to the other end of the extreme, where you have folks just focused on connection and relationship and, you know, how does he feel about this? And what is he saying about that? And they kind of get bogged down or stuck or even disinterested in actually doing things that are practical or meaningful. And I think for the horse, you know, being part of that, I think they can really learn to enjoy that, as well as the just cold, hard facts of practical skills and safety around these animals.
Right. So you, as you mentioned, you work with people from different disciplines. In your observation over the years, pick, say, a student of yours that has really looked at purpose and progress in a healthy and motivated way. What does that look like?
That's a good question. One lady comes to mind who was fairly competitive in dressage down in the South Island of New Zealand here. And she started coming to my clinics, and she really enjoyed the cattle working clinics because it gave us opportunity to work on all sorts of maneuverability and refine communication and develop accuracy in the things that she needed her horse to do. But it took us out of the sort of stale arena environment and into a dynamic environment that was constantly changing, constantly requiring different amounts of these different types of maneuvers, lateral work, and all sorts of stuff for her horse to be able to do with purpose. And I think that's one thing that starts to, you know, a lot of folks start to lack, is the purpose behind a lot of the stuff that we're doing with these horses. She called the cattle working clinics her secret weapon.
That's excellent. Can you give me an example, and again, you know, anonymous observation of students in your world, of people who on the surface may think they're making progress, but really aren't? And of course, I'm alluding to the kind of attention towards feelings and connection that may actually get in the way of purpose and progress. Can you think of examples? Randy Riemann once told me of his clinics, 80% of the people that show up at his clinics aren't there to really learn. About 20% are. But in your observation, what are some examples of folks who actually aren't motivated by progress and purpose?
That's an interesting one. I think it's certainly a kind of a broader view of people than just the ones that are sort of stuck in the sort of thinking and feeling side of things. I think I would have to agree with Riemann about that percentage. A lot of times folks don't understand the connections. And I really try to stress the connections between some of the things that we're asking our horses to do with how they're thinking and feeling, and helping them be better and feel better, okay, inside as well as outside in new situations or being asked to do new things or whatever the case might be. And folks don't always sort of connect the dots across the broad spectrum of principles so that they can understand and go to apply those things in different situations. And it just takes so much practice for us humans to get coordinated and be able to put these things together and understand what to do when, based on the answers to the questions of why, when, and how. And it's a tough one, but I think specifically, you know, there's a few folks that I can think of that, you know, that they study the brain science and they study the way horses behave and the herd behaviors and different things. And they kind of get bogged down in this idea that, you know, almost anything the human does is going to interrupt that horse's way of thinking and being, and they don't want to do that. So they go really, really, really slowly and basically begin to not ask for hardly anything. They just want to be with them. And there's nothing wrong with just being with them. If that's what you want to do, you just want to spend time and go read a book in the pasture and all this sort of stuff, that's fine. But I think we're missing out on a lot of possibilities. And I think also from a practical standpoint, the safety issue has to be addressed at some point, that these horses do understand, you know, enough for us to be safe around them. And if push was to come to shove in certain herd situations or what have you, that we would be able to be safe.
Great point. Thank you for that. So I've started a few older young horses last summer and still am. And the woman, Jessica Munn, who's been helping me, has really emphasized that, you know, when you put them in a bind, what they learn from being uncomfortable and surviving that discomfort can save their lives down the road. And I am thinking, of course, of tying up feet and having them be okay with a foot being, you know, not theirs to move around for a moment. And immediately after working with something like that in a safe space and tying up a foot, whatever, I have been in a situation where I've run into barbed wire that I didn't see out in the sage here in southwestern Colorado. And their discomfort that they paid for in the dry lot has paid off dividends when it could have been a wreck and it wasn't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's incredible how different perspectives that people have on that sort of a thing, where it's like, if we just don't go there, if we never push those horses, you know, then it's all going to be okay. But that doesn't really prepare them for real life in this world. And it doesn't matter. I mean, I guess if you never left the arena or you never left your little half acre lot or whatever, that might minimize those risks. But that's a classic example, that getting caught in wire or in a fence and having shown that horse how to simply willingly and thoughtfully yield its foot and not resist can literally save its life and probably save your life too at a certain point. And I've had that happen many, many times. I remember over the years, people would bring me young horses and one would say, he's never had a rope on him, never touched him, never, you know, never, ever that. And then another one say, yeah, I've picked up his feet and he's had ropes all over his legs and stuff. And he's, you know, he's pretty good to go. And just the two different perspectives, because there's a way to do that, as you well know, through preparation and steady, progressive, incremental steps, you know, where we're not talking rope burn. We're not talking throwing them down. We're not talking traumatic experience. We're talking exposing them to these ideas that are out of their comfort zone or right on the edge of that comfort zone, so that there can be learning and there can be confidence grown and they can understand that they can balance on three legs and survive and they can thoughtfully yield a foot for a period of time and it's going to be okay. And it's just another example of all the other things that we can do that they can learn to be okay with as they're exposed to it gradually and with trust and understanding, and that they are okay with it. They actually can survive. And in this world that we now live in, they need that.
On the other end of the speed spectrum, but still having to do with safety, I find that a lot of people, myself included, shy away from just opening up a horse in a gallop. You know, my cheat for that is to gallop uphill, because I always feel like I have a little more control. The horse is going a little slower, even though it's going all out. But what are your thoughts on the students that you see that may really hesitate from the outside the arena galloping experience?
That's an interesting one, and I think it's human nature to want to gallop up that hill for at least that reason that you mentioned. It seems to be very common and kind of the way where I guess we do feel the safest, or where we have the most control, make it a little harder for them to run off with us or something like that. I think it's one of those things that we have to realize that horses are capable of doing, whether they feel prone to that or not is a is an individual thing, but any horse is capable of moving like that. And if we don't have the ability to tap into it and communicate it in a way that's understood and remains responsive both upwards and downwards in those transitions, then the way I put it is we're often, it's like we're driving a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or something like that, and we're driving it to the grocery store once a week in a small town with lots of stoplights, and we never get over 25 miles an hour. And so we can go do that job with that vehicle, but we're kind of a liability with that thing because we don't actually know what that machine is capable of, and we're not really qualified to drive it at its full capabilities. And I think that we end up doing this a lot with our horses, even from the very beginning. You know, we teach a lot of disengaging of the hindquarters, yielding the hindquarters, taking the power out, shutting them down, those sorts of things to make sure we've got brakes and make sure we've can shut down reactive movement, and that's all good. Like we need those things, especially for green horses. You got to have that established to a point, but it gets overtaught and overused and misused to the point where you see people going on for sometimes years, and they're still have this maybe this hot horse that gets wound up, and they're trying to shut it down, and they're just butting heads with this horse, or they get a spooky horse, and all they've got is the one rein stop. That's the only strategy they've got, and it doesn't help the horse. They've not answered the questions, and they're trying to shut down movement when the horse is trying to figure stuff out through movement, like they do. That's their nature. And instead, we need to also focus just as much, and I try to focus in my clinics just as much on the idea of engagement and powering these horses up, and making sure that we can communicate that, and that they know we want their power, we want impulsion, we want quality forward movement, we want them to engage their hindquarters. And so we need to work both sides of the coins there and be able to tap into that and not just do the one, not the other, and end up not, like you say, not being comfortable to just take a gallop down the beach or something.
In your experience, I mentioned the trepidation on the rider's part, but do you see trepidation or just a discomfort in the horse's part when the rider has not been tapping into that impulsion?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it depends, of course, on the horse and their level of experience and stuff. But, you know, the first time that you canter or lope on a young horse under saddle, some of them might get a bit of a fright. Depends how much they've been prepared for that. And it's something that they have to experience and work out through movement that they're able to move like that and carry the rider and the saddle together. Ideally, that'd be an around pin, and then around they go, and they figured out pretty quick, here we are, this is all right. And you build from there. But when we don't go there, it's like anything else that we don't go there, just like we were saying about getting a horse good to hobble, you know, and leading them by a foot and that sort of a thing. If you don't go there, you don't know what you have. You don't know what their level of comfort is. And so some of your more nervy horses or less experienced horses can get a fright right there when you get them opened up. And then that might lead to a runaway, or it might lead to a bucking
Right.
session, or different things, you know, swerving off to the side and just pitching you out the side there, you know. I mean, different things can happen. And so I think it's progressive, right? Everything's progressive. You start one little step at a time. And I always tell people, think about the whole of what it is you want to do, whether that's a particular competition or a trail ride or a rope something, or all right, you want to gallop out across the meadow or across the beach. All right, how is he in the round pin at the canter? How is he, you know, in a short stretch? Can you rate him back down with your seat? You know, how, you know, what does he feel like there before you get end up and really open him up, you know?
A few more questions, Ben. How is all this in the best interest of the horse? You know, it is Best Horse Practices, the show. I find myself always circling back to how is this in the best interest of the horse? So can you give me some insight again with your clinician clinic and work with students of all kinds, how this circles back to being good for the horse?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a number of ways. And one thing that comes to mind right off is horses, domestic horses, the way that they're kept most of the time is not necessarily in a very natural environment. They're not getting the movement, which we know has to do with blood flow as their hooves contract. You know, all this, everything that goes on in movement is the way a horse was made to be. And being out in big country and traveling a fair bit, most every day, you know, you'll see most domestic horses quite happy to stand under a shade tree and swat flies and then go out and turn a little more grass into manure. And they seem pretty happy just doing that. But I think the reality is when you can combine some quality movement with purpose and give them a little job to do and bring them along on a partnership, a journey that you and them can become a partner working together on this purpose, it gives them that movement. It gives them the ability to go places and see things and do things similar to what they would be doing if they were out in the wild. I'm not saying, you know, that they'd be doing dressage out there, or that they'd be working cows out there. I'm just saying movement and going and doing things, going places. And then two, you know, I think that horses, they're not the same as dogs. They don't look for a relationship with humans like dogs do, I don't think. But there's something I think about the accomplishing of practical tasks that I think horses can start to relate to, particularly when it comes to working cattle because of the herd dynamic that's being dealt with. And even if you look at it from, again, the herd dynamic perspective, the dominating of those cows, there's a lot of horses that aren't necessarily very dominant in their herds who really actually enjoy being able to boss a cow around. And there's something in that for them as well. I think it keeps things fresh. If they're kept in small pens or pastures, you know, and they're able to get out and go places and do things, meet other horses and such, there's just a freshness about their work that they can really enjoy, as opposed to just being in the same place or doing the same routines with us every day. So I think there's a lot of different benefits, and there's probably more. I'm not kind of coming up with any more right off the top of my head here.
That's great. No, I appreciate those for sure. I think that you and I are lucky. You know, I'm raising horses that'll be put to work with cows, and I am lucky to have public land to get out on regularly. Yeah. I do think, though, you know, I have spent a lot of time riding in Maine, where there is very little public land and where there are few cows. And I did have to get creative about having a purpose. And I think that for listeners that do have to ride in an arena a lot and have limited space and don't have the purpose driven around ranching or whatnot, you can get creative and imaginative and energetic around creating purpose with every ride. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think that that's something that I learned here in New Zealand was, because it's similar here in a lot of places, was to be creative and to try to help people find new ways of finding purpose. I had one student that had a tree come down in a storm. And so she got the chainsaw out the next day and they bucked up the tree into smaller pieces. And then she got on her horse and drug logs and branches all day, you know, or half a day or whatever it was, you know. But that sort of idea of purpose and getting her horse better about dragging stuff while getting a job done.
Yeah. A couple other examples I had thought of are you can herd bicyclists. When I was trying to get one of my younger horses desensitized around mountain bikes, I just asked one of the bikers if I could follow them. And that's a real confidence boost. The alternative, of course, would be the mountain biker coming up from behind, which, as anybody who shares the trails with mountain bikers knows, is kind of a recipe for disaster. Even things like going to get the mail or honing another horse are nice little hacks to engage the horse. I wanted to give you a few minutes to talk about, you know, speaking of purpose, the sessions you do in Oregon around stockmanship. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Absolutely, absolutely. So over the years, starting here in New Zealand, we started developing a week-long workshop based on ranches or stations to incorporate basically the big country and all the obstacles or challenges that we come across when riding out in big country. And then the idea of cattle work and the principles of low stress stockmanship to bring purpose and really an enjoyable experience for both the horse and the rider. What this does is gives us practical application for the horsemanship skills that we're developing. So the way I look at it is it's kind of a combination of three clinics: a horsemanship clinic, a stockmanship or what I like to call horsemanship through stockmanship clinic, and then our on the trail horsemanship. And the idea, of course, behind horsemanship, which I believe is a way of being around a horse that fits the horse, is that we're constantly growing and adapting our approaches to fit our horse and the situation that we find ourselves in to best help them think and feel what we need them to do, feel better about what we need them to do. And the cattle work particularly is a very unique setting where we can start off by simulating different little jobs or little tasks that we can do. And the horse very quickly locks on to that because of the herd dynamic and the common understanding that they have with cows, and can share in that purpose with the rider. And it's just, I think it's one of the best ways, but it's also one of the most fun ways that we can advance our maneuverability, our accuracy and refinement in our communication, and just continue to advance our horsemanship in a real fun way. So
Excellent.
we do those. We've got one coming up in Oregon in August, but we actually kind of do those just about anywhere in the world. We've just finished up a couple here in New Zealand, both the North and the South Islands. We're in discussion, pretty serious discussion, with some folks in Spain about doing it possibly next year over there. And so we're always looking for different places. We've got an international group coming to Nevada in the spring to join us there for a similar experience. And so we're just really trying to focus on helping people take their horsemanship, particularly those who have got some things going in the arena, got some things going, some understanding, so they're ready to really take it to the next stage and apply it practically.
Here in the States, can people bring their own horses?
Great question. So, like I said, the international group that's coming to Nevada, that's specifically for folks who can't bring their own horses. And I think we do mostly have overseas people coming to that, but of course it's not limited to that. So if you're coming from the East Coast or what have you, or couldn't bring your own horse, that would be ideal. Otherwise, most of the time we do encourage folks to bring their own horses, because obviously we're talking about trying to advance your journey and your partnership with your horse in a very practical way. And the one of the participants last week, one of her comments was kind of cool. She said, "I have never made so much progress with so little pressure." And that was kind of a cool way to sum it up, because she's quite a good rider. She's done a lot of different stuff, from dressage to barrel racing over the years. And she just recognized the value of what we're doing in making progress with our horses and our partnership there, but without pressure, without mashing them, without making stuff happen left, right, and center. It's just, you got 5, 6 days and all this variety of landscape, and the job with the cattle changes all the time. And it's just so refreshing and so much fun.
Yeah, that's great. It reminds me of just reinforcing something that a horse or a dog, for that matter, might do naturally. I'm thinking of teaching direction to my dogs using the command come by and away, which is clockwise and counterclockwise to work around cattle. And really, it's just a matter of you see the situation happening where they're going to flow naturally right or left, and you start applying the cue. And before you know it, so when I think of her comment around low stress, that's just wonderful when you can put a horse in a setting where they can latch onto a little bit of their instinct.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like Ray Hunt used to say, where the mind of the horse goes.
Right, right. Cool. Well, thank you very much. We will link to your pages and your channels and platforms in the show notes. And Ben, thanks a lot. I really got a lot out of this. It was a very important show for me. I'm really glad to have touched base with you around this topic.
I sure appreciate it again, Maddie. I enjoyed visiting with you, and I think it's definitely an important topic to try to get out there and hopefully get a little balance between the two kind of extremes I think that we're seeing.